Are you ready for the Low Blows Network?
The last year of our lives has seen us disconnected from the rest of the world, forced to retreat to our homes like a bunch of basement-dwelling smeagles, obsessively going from episode to episode of shows where we watch people perform such impossible feats as working in an office together and sitting in a coffee shop making pleasant conversation. Our entire access to the outside world, unless you count 5-second interactions with shopkeepers, and I do, nobody can pack my chicken fillet roll like you can, Sahil, now comes through screens. And as we've learned in damning depth through documentaries like The Social Dilemma on Netflix, those dickhead screens are trained to pick up on our worst instincts and literally fuck our brains stupid. Your phones, tablets and devices are now programmed with algorithms designed to keep your attention at all costs. So-called free services like Google, Twitter, Instagram and Facebook's business models rely on it. They, in many cases quite literally as we all know by now, listen to our private conversations, track our Google searches and filter the content we consume. All the while, they're keeping us distracted by things like meaningless but addictive like buttons that share similar endorphin-hitting properties as the soothing thrill of pulling a lever on a slot machine in Vegas. The grand plan is to keep us scrolling, clicking and liking at any cost so they can learn what kind of content does that, feed us more of it, then sell that information to the real customers, corporations and advertisers. This was once a conspiracy theory. Now, it's an established fact admitted by many who helped design these exact algorithms for these companies. With lockdown, we are now fully dependent on our screens. It's how we talk to our families and friends, how we distract ourselves from the seemingly endless void that our existence has become in an indefinite state of lockdown. Excuse me. This is a dangerous recipe because though leading tech companies are now put under public pressure to at least pay lip service to the idea of releasing us from brain prison for a walk for an hour or two a day, we already know that they don't give a fuck what the consequences of their actions are as long as they get paid. See Facebook being held up as responsible for Russian political interference in the 2016 US election that resulted in us being forced to sit through 4 years of a racist failed businessman turned orange-coated pussy grabber getting access to the nuclear launch codes. On a ground level too, we can see this in action. For the sake of not hurting CT Flex's feelings, let's take a hypothetical example and invent a fictional character called Mark to see the impact that this can have on a normal person. Mark, pre-lockdown, was a sound but dim, harmless character that doesn't seem to care about much beyond taking selfies of his abs in the gym. But that's not possible now because in a situation where a deadly virus that has wiped out 2.5 million people worldwide, that's the equivalent of over 840 September the 11th attacks, and said virus is spread by close contact, opening gyms where people sweat, breathe, heave and spit on each other is not a priority. That makes Mark sad because Mark's self-esteem is significantly built upon the idea that he is one jacked motherfucker. To paraphrase 2007's hottest R&B songstress Jordan Sparks, tell me how I'm supposed to breathe with no abs. Can't live, can't breathe with no abs. That's how I feel whenever you ain't there. Abs. No. Abs. In a world before screens brain-fucking us endlessly, Mark would mope around for a while until everyone in his life would grow sick of it and tell him to cop on. He'd go running, do Zoom home workouts, or just learn to love carbs again. He may even look inward at why this material instinct is so important to him, recalibrate his self-esteem towards a healthier overall outlook on life, and all would be fine. But that's not how the world works in 2021. When we have screens, we have a portal where we can literally take any idle thought we may have and find people who share it to validate us. No joke, I just googled the phrase ginger people reincarnated as cats, and it gave me 1,350,000 search results. I made that sentence up off the top of my head, and there are literally over a million hits filled with people who probably legitimately think that ginger people specifically are reincarnated as cats when they die. And so a forlorn and dejected Mark goes online and finds similarly dejected narcissists who don't particularly care about the virus either. When they look at an elderly or vulnerable person who may be affected by the virus, all they see is a person who can't deadlift 100 kilograms. They congregate and go into victim mode, wondering why the world is so prejudiced against them for being staunch. They begin to click and share links to tell them what they want to hear. And that's where our old pals, the algorithms, come back into play. The algorithm doesn't have an opinion. It's literally a match formula, so it doesn't get bothered by things such as truth or context. It doesn't say, "Ah, Mark, I see you like idiots. Here are some more idiots you may appreciate." When it makes its recommendations and begins to personally tailor content towards Mark, as he sees it, it's just reliable as any other scientific-looking thingamajig. Mark starts to go down a rabbit hole that simultaneously feeds his victimhood and offers him easy ways to rationalize him doing whatever the fuck he wants. Because this is a rabbit hole millions of people are going down together at the same time, this isn't even a particularly difficult work for the algorithm. It just sends him down conspiracy theory hole 1B. COVID is a hoax. It feels good to feel right and vindicated. It's literally physically pleasurable. For me, when something I predicted would happen turns out that way, such as the outcome of this year's Super Bowl, which, not bragging, I outlined in depth on a recent edition of Nash before it even happened. It's like a pressure valve is released inside my brain. I feel validated, like I'm Neo seeing the Matrix while the rest of the stupid fucking planet is still plugged in. Then I go and stub my toe trying to get into bed and remember that even a broken clock is right twice a day. There's science behind this sensation that most of us can relate to. When challenged or stressed and feeling like we've been wronged, the hormone and neurotransmitter cortisol floods the brain, causing advanced thought processes like strategy, compassion, and trust building to fall down. Our instinctive brain, the amygdala, triggers and we go into fight or flight mode, which is why people tend to double down once challenged on issues. Then, if we feel like we've been vindicated, adrenaline and dopamine flood our brain instead, making us feel almost invincible. This is the pressure valve, seeing the Matrix release that I spoke of earlier. And that's what going down a rabbit hole, even one filled with rabbit shit, feels like. We get addicted to that feeling of invincibility incredibly easily because it's seductive to think that we're superior and smarter than everyone else. So Mark reads posts by so-called doctors who say that COVID isn't what it's cracked up to be and that lockdowns are harmful. He combines that with a dash of truthful info such as the impact this phase is having on all of our mental health. It's natural for us to all look then at who's making these decisions, and with any government who has to make these decisions, whose entire purpose is to question and criticize their decisions. So if your goal is to prove gym needs to be open and you see the government as responsible for closing them, you're going to ignore anything that says that that was actually the correct decision and instead fly towards any and all criticism that gives you another taste of that sweet, sweet dopamine. Mark now feels like he's Indiana Jones, having accidentally leaned on a brick wall and uncovered a secret treasure. And in Mark's chamber of secrets, i.e. lying on his bed and his jocks, there are people who see the opportunity for power and profit in far-right extremist groups. They offer to do all the work and research for him and open his eyes to similar miscarriages of justice. All they ask in exchange is a vote, a donation, his participation in a protest that they're organizing. At the protest, Mark meets like-minded people and they all mentally wank each other off. The dopamine rush is now becoming a dopamine addiction, and the only way to continue the high is to get others on board, to uncover more issues and to get more extreme in how they protest. And that's how a nice lad like Mark, who just wanted to go to the gym, which is a perfectly fair need to have in any other period of our existence, ends up shooting fireworks at Gardaí in broad daylight on Grafton Street. So, how do we handle the marks of this world? If we know how this is caused, we can surely figure out how to defeat it. The first natural instinct we have is to shame and punish these people. Let's challenge that though, given what we now understand. We know that Mark is in fight or flight mode when challenged and has already had several hits of dopamine, having felt validated on his journey to that point. We know that he sees our point of view as naive, given that he probably once shared it beforehand. So how is he going to feel when we shame him together? Is he more likely to change his mind and go back to his old thought processes that he feels he's proven wrong since? Or is he more likely to double down and think that we're all sheep and stupid? We know the answer to this already in 99% of cases. If it's someone famous like Tiger Woods, after his affairs were made public and sponsors threatened to pull out, putting his fortune in jeopardy, then shame may be enough to pressure them into a public apology and a dose of soul searching. But even then, for every case of that, you've got a Gina Carano, whose walk of atonement from Disney only pushed her into the arms of Ben Shapiro and the extreme conservative media. And here's where it gets complex, because we all understand this rationally once we step back from the situation. Shaming people is not a reliable motivator for overall global change. It may push an opinion out of public view, but that'll pop back up in other unexpected and more damaging ways. Think Trump being elected or Brexit being passed despite opinion polls showing the exact opposite was likely beforehand. Why do we continue to do this? Well, it's because, and we may not want to admit this, but we're the same as Mark. When we see images like the Grafton Street protests, we get triggered. Cortisol floods our brain, compassion goes out the window, and our amygdala takes the wheel on a hunt for a dopamine hit. We quote tweet and post statuses shaming these people. We lose track of any sense of time or the plans we may have had and start scrolling, liking, retweeting, finding other opinions like ours in the exact same way Mark did when he wanted gyms reopened. I did, and do, the exact same myself. It's something we're all guilty of. Even listening to this right now, you may be offended to be compared to Mark. And why is that? Did you previously feel superior to him when I was making fun of him earlier because you understood and he didn't? You may be feeling irrationally angry at me and want to switch off or lash out or go speak to someone to validate how you feel. But is that all again? Not the exact same experience we described earlier, except it was happening to Mark? This is how our brains work within the algorithm. It divides us into completely separate camps where people who may start out from a reasonable, united standpoint end up yelling at each other over an issue that's tiny to start with but unravels into something much, much bigger. How do we beat the algorithm then? It's well and good to say disconnect entirely, but doing that during COVID may not be possible for you to maintain your job, your relationship, checking that your family are okay, or even having a way to just get through 24 hours of the day when their potential list of things we can do is severely restricted. The solution is actually incredibly simple. We talk to each other. We respect each other. We try to see the other person's side, even if that seems impossible. Instead of seeing Mark as a Nazi, we see him as a guy who just wants to go to the gym and ask what went wrong along the way. Let's put this into practice. You're hanging out with a friend and he says something that's very racist. Do you A, block them, B, get into a heated argument with them and call them names, C, report them to relevant authorities, or D, see them as your friend who's done a bad thing but could be ignorant and try engage them in a discussion to see if educating them can turn them around? Well, instead of judging it by what's the end result that makes us feel good in the moment, how about we look at what's the end result that we want and what is the most likely outcome to happen based off the different reactions? Option A protects us from having to hear this stuff said, but only by them specifically. We can't realistically block every racist thing from all human beings being said. It doesn't change anything, and now our former friend may not even realize why they were blocked to begin with, so it's achieved nothing. Do we want to feel superior and get a lot of likes or pats on the back from like-minded people for how we told them? Well, that's really all that option B achieves. They're still racist and they just think we're stupid now. And now we trigger them and send them down a rabbit hole to go talk with other racists about how we're actually the dumb ones. Congratulations, in your battle against racism, you've actually pushed someone closer to being a Nazi. Hope those likes were worth it. Sure, we can report them and maybe they will be punished. In certain circumstances, such as in the workplace, this is the right call, but it also removes any control or influence from your hands and instead entrusts it on a system that may not be just or fair. Ask someone who's experienced racism, for example, how fair and just they feel the world systems are towards them. And then there's option D. It's the most unpleasant and uncomfortable by far, I acknowledge this. It doesn't give us the instant relief of blocking them and avoiding the situation altogether. It doesn't give us the catharsis of feeding our amygdala and putting them in their place, or the sense of justice we may feel in getting them punished. It goes against all of our brain's natural reactions and forces us to have to first challenge our natural reaction when we haven't done anything wrong. And worst of all, it means we have to try and have a respectful conversation with a racist. Ugh. But the potential end result far supersedes anything that can come from options A to C. By treating our friend as a decent person, even if we're pretending for the sake of indulging them, we're far more likely to engage and speak to the side of Mark that's just upset the gyms are closed. If we get someone in a reasonable state, we are then able to reason with them. We can educate them as to why their comments may be wrong and hurtful to others. We may not fully convince them, and the truth of the matter is that we ultimately don't have the right to dictate what others think, even if it's abhorrent. But at the very least, we can draw a boundary where that person will limit when and where they make and spread those comments. So, at the very least, even if we haven't stopped racism, we've limited its spread. Compared to the other three potential reactions, is this not the obvious solution? And that's how we ultimately beat the algorithm, by doing the exact opposite of what it wants. Right now, the algorithm is working us, not working for us. It's not even who we are that it's feeding us, it's the worst of who we are. Think of things that stop me in the street, or when I'm flicking through channels on TV, or when I'm scrolling on Twitter. They include stuff like the Jeremy Kyle show, a public argument between people that I know on social media, or two drug addicts punching the head off each other. But that's not who I am or who I want to be. It is what grabs my attention though, so it's what the algorithm tries to convince me the entire world is. You'd be fair to say that if we change, then so will the algorithms. But if the algorithm changes to instead feed us a fair, more rational world filled with respectful discourse that leads to more unity, is that not an absolute dream? Remember, the algorithm doesn't give a fuck what we want as long as we want more of it. Changing our behavior can get us all on the same page. The battle is won one case at a time, one decision at a time for each of us. Because when you weigh it all up, just accepting that our friends are Nazis is admitting defeat when we've got to share the same planet with them one way or another. I'd rather choose the other. What one will you choose?